Recorded Books and One-Click Digital present Hunters in the Dark by Lawrence Osborne. Narrated by Stephen Hogan.
To show you mercy is no gain. To destroy you is no loss. The Ankar. Karma. Chapter 1. He came over the border as the lights were about to be dimmed, with the last of the migrants trailing their stringed boxes. With them came gamblers from the air-conditioned buses, returning short-time exiles tumbling out of minivans with microwaves and DVD units. The border forced them all into a defile in the rain. The gamblers complained about their summary treatment while opening plastic umbrellas provided by the tour company. It seemed a shame to them that the casinos on the other side could not manage it better. Their Bangkok shoes began to suffer in the coffee-coloured mud. Between the two posts, the ground was already filled with pools, and the dogs waited for the money. The hustlers and drivers were there, silently smoking and watching their prey. The officer ripped away his departure card in the Thai hut, and his passport came back to him, and he set off for the farther side, lit up by the arc lamps. The drivers began to wave, to raise their arms and shout, but he could not hear what the words were. Carrying a single bag, he was quick on his feet. He had the aura of poverty about him, but still he was white and therefore, in their eyes, affluent. He went under the dry eaves of the opposing nation and gave his passport anew to the men behind a shabby window. There were four windows, and the men behind did not look very forgiving. They bore considerable weight in their eyes. In the bare concrete rooms, tables were set up with thermos flasks and darkened TV sets. The new High King on the walls in his wise white uniform. "Tourist," he said, and they charged him a surplus $2 for not having a photograph for the visa. He counted out his baht and pushed the filthy money across the table, and they stuck a full-page green visa into a page of his passport and tossed it dismissively back at him. He had a month to roam their green and pleasant kingdom, and he spent the first minute looking across at the neon lights of the casinos, the dusk and the men waving at him. The pools opening up under the lamps had grown green as well, and he walked gingerly around them with his shoulder bag and his straw hat growing soggy as the rain enveloped him.
"Sa, taxi!"
the men were crying, already each one setting off toward a large, run-down Japanese car. Forced to pick one at random, he chose a man with a Toyota and an umbrella, and it was $7 into Pailin. Above them shone the red and blue lights of the Diamond Crown Casino, but he was tired and not yet in the mood for a fling on the tables. He resolved to return the following night. He sat in the back seat and drank from the bottle of iced tea he had bought at the border stalls. The verges were filmed red with sticky and wetted dust, and in the dark were rolling green hills dotted with primeval-looking, isolated trees. Fields of mung and shaggy sugarcane. It was windy, the sky jagged with storm clouds and a peeping Tom moon. The sight of a disaster, or of a disaster about to happen. The earth dark with iron and cloying and musty to the nose. He was down to $100, so he asked the driver to take him to a cheap place for the night. He didn't care where. Turning his head for a moment, the driver told him there were only two or three choices in the town anyway, and none of them was the Hilton. A half hour later, they were passing the traffic circles of the town, a few roadside bars with red Angkor beer signs. A small park with 12 golden horses prancing in a grit-filled wind. The man took him to a place called the Hang Mias. It was on the main road to the border, which was lined by one-story shops. Pailin, to his eye, was clearly a place with three streets and little more. A town built on illegal gemstones and the undeparted Khmer Rouge. A dead and absurd sign on the hotel's façade read, as if contradicting its current lamentable state, Le Manoir de Pailin.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?